Welcome today to the August 3rd edition of the Security Week in Review, brought to you by Storefront Backtalk and The Hack Report. I'm Evan Schumann, editor of StorefrontBackTalk.com. We've got some fairly interesting security issues this week, some PCI issues, some Certigy updates, and the latest on TJX weathering the storm. But more importantly than that, we have got a pair of extraordinarily intrepid security observers with us today. We have, from Gartner, Aviva Leitin, and we have got the newest member of the PCI Security Council, Chris Hines, from Motorola. And I want to welcome you both today. Earlier this week, Visa released their latest PCI compliance figures, and for the most part, it was very good news in the sense that just about every single category, the numbers went up. Incremental, but still a definite increase. One of the most interesting numbers was what they stressed, what they led with, which was that 96% of the retailers they're talking with have said, this is not audited, this is their representations, but that 96% said they are not retaining prohibited data. Of course, what that means is that 4% of level 1 and level 2, in other words, 4% of the largest retailers are still retaining that kind of data. And in August of 2007, that's a wee bit unnerving. Aviva, you were taking a look at some of these numbers and had some interesting take on that. How big a deal do you find those figures?
I think the figures indicate the difficulty that merchants have in changing and upgrading their systems so they're not storing full track data. Merchants have thousands and thousands of endpoints, at least the largest merchants do. Some of these systems are run on old Windows or DOS boxes, and they're scattered throughout thousands of locations. It's very difficult for them to just rip everything out overnight, replace it with new software so that it's not storing full track data. They've got to look at every single process flow throughout the organization. It's not an excuse that they shouldn't do it. It's just a fact that it's not so simple. Just think about upgrading your own PC and multiply that by 10,000 and think about the difficulty you would have, especially with a mission critical application. So my view is that it's a collective problem that demands a collective solution, and it's a bit tilted to put all the onus on the retailers. Granted, they rolled these systems out without thinking too much about security, but sometimes that was 10, 15 years ago when the credit card companies were pushing card acceptance and there weren't cyber criminals around that were stealing data. So at this point, we've got to do everything we can to stop the criminals, and I think the banks need to do more to strengthen cardholder authentication. There's a lot that we can do on the card itself so that even if the data are stolen by the criminals, they can't use them because we could put some type of dynamic authentication on the card, which the thieves would not be able to steal. So that would be something like a one-time password that's generated every 60 seconds, or even what they've done in the wireless contactless card industry with dynamic CVV. So bottom line is this is a big problem that demands a collective solution. The MagStripe technology needs to be updated. Even if you get every single retailer complying with PCI and not storing full-track data today, something's likely to go on in a month that could change that, and I just think it's not really a balanced situation to put it all on retailers.
Now, you've raised a couple of interesting points. Let me just throw those out, and let me pull Chris in a second. But one of the interesting thoughts is that Visa has been stressing that, indeed, as you pointed out, the contactless cards already have essentially something akin to a one-time password issuing approach where the data, if stolen, would not indeed be of value to the cyber thieves. But to do it any other way is going to impose such a cost on the card that we're not seeing any issuers doing that. We were looking into this a couple months ago, and no issuers had any interest in doing it. They just didn't see the ROI. They couldn't see how they could justify the cost because it's not going to bring any additional revenue. Do you see any changes to the cards themselves being popularly adopted above and beyond regular contactless?
I do see some innovation on the mag stripe. There are a couple vendors out there, QSecure is one of them, that will actually put a little chip in the mag stripe that will write a dynamic code to the stripe without any upgrade to the merchant's infrastructure. It only requires an upgrade to the card issuer. And the bottom line is we're probably talking $5 a card in volume. And when you think about all the fees that credit card companies impose on consumers and merchants, I don't really see the significance of an extra $5 a card. In fact, I think that the card companies could charge a security fee back to consumers of $5 that they would barely notice on their statement when they're looking at all their other financing fees. So this argument that it adds too much cost to the cards is, in my mind, really overstated, especially when you look at some of the technology that's out there today.
You would actually take the $5, split it in 12s, and make it a monthly fee, and you could even do it over 2 years if you want. You could really make it entirely transparent or virtually transparent. Let me throw one other thought, and I wanted to bring Chris in on this. Another concern that has been mentioned about the prohibited data area is not just that they can't get it all back or they can't control it, although that's part of it. It is that in some instances, the larger, particularly the level one, larger enterprises are not aware of all the places the data goes. So many departments have been grabbing it, taking copies for various purposes, that when they go to clean it out, they're going to miss pockets of it. Do you think that's prevalent, that a lot of the larger companies are not even aware of all the places their prohibited data resides?
Definitely. That's the number one issue that we hear from our merchant clients at Gartner is, we get calls, we don't even know where the data is. And that's a fact. If you've ever managed a large legacy system environment, it's often beyond your visibility where all the data is going. So the first thing they need to do is use some type of discovery process to go out to all their servers and PCs and files and look around. It's usually the data in the log files that they don't even know about. So it may not even be in the central database. It could be in a log file. It could also be downloaded to USB sticks and taken home, and then it's totally out of the scope of the enterprise. But, yeah, it's like a leaking sieve, and that's just a fact of life when you're dealing with very large, complicated systems.
Chris, what is your take?
Well, I think Viva makes a great point that when you get to a certain size, there just becomes a virtual impossibility to track where all this data is gone. And going forward, I think companies are going to be a lot better about this. They're a little bit more aware of the problem. But when you have a large legacy infrastructure in place and you maybe had policies in place in the past in which more people had access or were touching that data and were storing it maybe for their own uses, I think it's a real scary thought for a lot of retailers of, geez, we don't know just who may have had a copy of this data and where it may be sitting now. Is it on somebody's desk? Is it on somebody's drive? But, I actually really want to go back to some of the stuff about the dynamic CCVs on the cards. I think that's a very, very good point that Aviva's brought up and a great way to progress forward over on the PCI Council. I think it would be a great thing for PCI to start looking at end-to-end cardholder data security and look at taking on that as something that could be merged into the PCI standard. I think that would be excellent. Right now, I think a lot of retailers view themselves as being the ones that are taking the brunt of all this. I think it would be a good thing to start showing that, hey, look, the credit card companies are also going to take a little bit of the hit here, and everybody's working for better security.
One last thought on this. Another point that Visa made is back, that was their primary point as to why the 4% are still out there, was the applications that are being used to process a lot of the data. Visa has put out a list, which they don't want to publicize for obvious reasons, of applications that they do not feel are sufficiently vigorous at protecting that data. How much of it do you think is the fault of the applications? I mention this because there's another action with the FACTA efforts, the not printing full credit card numbers on the receipts. And there have been some retailers who've gotten caught up in that, and they're blaming their POS vendors, saying, look, what do you think we get a POS system for? We expect them to be compliant with the laws, and if we're liable, they're going to be brought in too. So how bad is it, the applications? Do you think that's a major factor in this?
And personally, I think that's a major hole right now in the PCI standard, that there is no PCI standard for applications, for payment applications, and therefore retailers don't know if their software is storing data and is certified to be PCI compliant. I understand that the council is looking at the Visa standard. It's got a standard called PABP, Payment Application Best Practices, and it also lists software vendors that are compliant with its standard. But that needs to be adopted at the PCI card brand wide level. Even when it's adopted, though, so assuming merchants can go to a point-of-sale terminal vendor or any other payment application vendor and say, you've got to be certified before we do business with you, and that's a major requirement right now that's not being fulfilled. But even if it is fulfilled, it's not like everyone can run out and buy new software and put it in overnight. So there's got to be a grace period in terms of time that it can reasonably take to move to compliant systems. And one other thought, even after you upgrade to a compliant software application, you got to be careful to erase all the old data you got lying around. We've seen that. Merchants put in upgraded systems, and then they forget there's some audit trail data left behind based on the old application. You know, think of your own PC. These are all decentralized local systems. You upgrade new software, you often forget to erase your old data files. It's the same principle here.
Officially, if a retailer, let's say the council proceeds and puts together certification for the applications, if a retailer is using an application certified as compliant, should they be exempt from any penalties if it's found out they are retaining the data? In other words, should they legally be allowed to rely that their point of sale will make sure there is no incorrect data on receipts and that their other transaction applications are making sure that data that's not supposed to be kept is indeed not being kept?
So I don't know that you could go that far with a generalization, because different applications could have different scopes, and it's entirely possible that a given application that is fully certified could be circumvented by an installation. That's always one of the concerns that you have anytime you're providing any sort of software or hardware that is meant to go into a PCI environment or any sort of security environment, that you install it, you do all the things right, even if you send your own installer as a company providing the application, and that some sort of circumventing behavior occurs at the company you installed at, and now the overall environment, which is what PCI is interested in, the full environment, is now not PCI compliant because they're doing something, and they've really circumvented what the application has tried to do. So I don't think we could go quite that far. However, what I do agree with, which I think is the heart of your statement, that if a audit was done because there was a compromise or there was a concern, and it was found that the application itself was the one storing the data or allowing for data to leak out, not something that had been done by the company installing it, but actually the application itself was at fault, then I do believe that there should be a transference of that liability over to the application maker, because in that circumstance, the retailer has tried to do everything in good faith. They've installed this application with the understanding that it's going to do the right thing, and if they aren't actively circumventing it or even accidentally circumventing it, if the application itself is the one guilty of the violation, I do think that vendor, the person that's given them that application, should step up to the plate and say, yeah, you know, we'll take this on. You guys didn't do anything wrong.
Excellent. Let me flip to a different topic. There was a wonderful insider attack reported a month or so ago. It involved Fidelity National Information Services and its unit, Certegy. And what it had been accused of was that a LAN administrator there had taken millions of names and had sold them to an information broker, which was against policy and laws and all kinds of other naughty things. What came out this week was that the number that they had reported was remarkably higher, millions higher, than initially had been estimated. How big an issue? Let me throw this let us start here with Chris initially. How big an issue right now is the insider data threat? Clearly, it has been drilled into our heads for 10 years that is the biggest threat out there. And yet, how many people are still prepared to deal with it, which really gets down to how many people are there to have personnel redundancy, to have outsiders or other people checking the work of their people? Who can afford that kind of security?
I think it's a much bigger danger than a lot of people want to admit to. It's a very difficult thing to think about, and it's a harsh one to realize when you go to put your policies in place. I think a lot of people would really like to believe that all their employees are going to be upstanding and that some such a thing isn't going to occur. But as we saw in this particular example, the person in question knew exactly how to circumvent all of the safety measures that they had in place. Once you've got someone like that, and there's no check and balance on that individual, they have free run, and it can be extremely difficult to ever track them down. And I think your point that you made is exactly what I would encourage companies to really start thinking about, is really get some division of responsibility amongst different people. So this guy's allowed to access it, but this guy is responsible for monitoring that activity, and split those jobs up so no one person can know how to circumvent the auditing and is responsible for checking the auditing. Because I think that's what you see a lot of now. In this case, you know, the guy who's responsible for making sure that people aren't accessing the data in questionable ways is also the guy who's going to do it. Well, if the guy who checks the accessors can't actually access themselves, now they are one step more removed.
Aviva, how often do you see that kind of a check and balance in some of the larger retailers, or for that matter, some of the not-so-large retailers?
Yeah, and it's not only a matter of retailers, it's processors, anyone that has sensitive data, healthcare agencies, hospitals, insurance companies. There's very little penetration of employee monitoring. I would say less than 5% of companies have systems that monitor access to sensitive data. Most of the companies, I think well over half out there, are monitoring email and file transfers for sensitive information being leaked out of the company. But there is very little penetration of monitoring systems doing exactly what Chris just talked about, segregation and duty monitoring. So the DBA, for example, database administrator, has the keys to the kingdom, and no one's watching the DBA, which was exactly what happened in this case. You don't have to spend a lot of money to monitor those systems. There's lots of technology. We just wrote a research note on all the different kinds of monitoring systems that you can put in for a few $100,000 that are pretty effective. They're very effective at monitoring policies. So enterprises are spending millions and millions of dollars setting up identity and access management systems, largely in response to Sarbanes-Oxley, which does require segregation of duty. So they're setting up the access rights, but they're not monitoring that access. So you could imagine the scenario where they say, yes, our DBA can access all the tables, but no one's monitoring the nature of that access. So, I personally think that it's a no-brainer. The problem with security is there's no hard ROI. And if you ask an executive, would you rather spend money securing your systems or attracting new customers, 8 times out of 10 or 9 times out of 10, they'll say, we want to build revenue, not, you know, add to security budgets.
It's not even just securing the systems. The question often will come down to, do you mind if we have redundant functions because we can't afford to trust our people? That can be a very difficult argument to make. It's a very dangerous one if you ignore it, though.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily redundant. It's just kind of a watchdog system. And sure, you know, we don't all want to be watched. I don't like the thought of being watched. You don't like the thought of being watched, but in terms of accessing the corporate secrets and customer-sensitive data, I don't think anyone would rightfully object to being monitored in that respect.
Chris, what do you think? Think there's going to be pushback, philosophical, psychological, or financial?
Well, there's always pushback to anything new, particularly on the financial side. But I think one of the things that you see is that this is very different for people than the Sarbanes-Oxley stuff is, because most companies already had finance as a fairly separated, well-understood area, and it was usually located in their headquarters, and that's where it operated, and the data was all in one spot. One thing that makes this particularly difficult is credit card data can be dispersed a little bit more widely between your environments. There can be people who might have access to that data on a site-by-site basis, you know, at individual stores who might be able to access that. It becomes a much trickier problem. And you're seeing a lot of pushback just from the complexity of it that says, you know, rather than face this big complex problem, I'd rather pretend it doesn't exist.
Excellent. Let's turn to our third topic for today. TJX. Yes, TJX, one of the favorite security topics these days in retail segments, has been the punching bag for a lot of security concerns, not entirely without reason. One of the arguments has been that TJX, the extent to which TJX suffers or feels pain as a result of this situation is going to influence many, many other large retailers who are going to look to them and think, well, worst case scenario, let's see what happens to TJX. If they fare fairly well, that will make it easier for us to not pay attention to security as much as we should. TJX this week has, for months now, has had very, very little financial impact in terms of consumers abandoning the stores. They've had some rough spots, but they were not tied in to security concerns per se. This week, we had a new hint. We had Credit Suisse boosting their price target for TJX, which is a very, very good sign of confidence that their financial activity is going to remain strong. So let me throw it over to both of you. How much is TJX going to be seen as having paid pain to the extent of other retailers being willing to spend money to avoid their fate? Aviva?
I can tell you that I got lots of phone calls from retailers after the TJX breach that were concerned they were going to be the next one. And this mainly came from CEOs calling up their CIOs, you know, or their risks officers and saying, keep us out of the headlines. So it was a bit of a knee-jerk reaction. And you're absolutely right. When those CEOs look at the TJX financials, I'm sure they're going to calm down, like, okay, this stuff doesn't hurt us. On the other hand, I don't think it's over for TJX. Certainly, their business model is strong. Consumers don't really know about this. I don't think consumers think it was TJX's problem. I think they think it's the bank's problem. I'll know better in a couple months when I get some survey data back, but that's just my reaction to it. So it certainly may not have hurt their sales. It looks like it didn't at all. Their sales went up. But on the other hand, they have had well over $10 million in costs. I mean, last time I looked, it was over $11 million, and I think it was mounting. So no executive wants to bear $15, $25 million in fines and lawsuits. And I don't think that the saga's over yet. So, again, it's a balancing act. Certainly the pain's not as large as it could have been. TJX didn't fall apart. Their stock didn't crash. Consumers didn't stay out of the stores. But it certainly is money that they're going to have to put out for fines and lawsuits that they'd rather not put out. So I think it mitigated the reaction and the extreme fear of becoming the next TJX, but I don't think it eliminated it.
Well, there was one other thought that TJX itself got some protection or has some protection that many other large retailers do not have, which is that many of their stores do not use the TJX name. So assuming that consumers saw the headlines, and the headlines in the consumer press were not nearly as prevalent as they were in the trade press, but even to the extent that they knew that TJX was bad and I'm not going to go to TJX, a healthy percentage of those consumers wouldn't have hesitated to go to Marshalls or Home Goods or any other TJX name that didn't store, that didn't have their name on it. That's a protection that Walmart and Circuit City and others simply don't have. Their stores are all operating under the corporate name. So to the extent that that blunted the pain, that may not or that would not protect other retailers.
Yeah, that's a great point. I still think consumers blame their banks, though, even if they heard about TJX, because when consumers get hurt, it's when the bank contacts them and says, your account may have been compromised, or they look at their statement and see an erroneous charge. They don't sit there and think, where did I go shopping in the last year? They sit there and think, I better get a new card. The bank better give it to me. And banks do tell me that they're always asked, how did this happen? Where did it happen? Which is one reason they want to know about breaches right away. But I think what you say about the brand recognition is absolutely true. Who knows what TJX is? It sounds a little like TJ Maxx, but it certainly doesn't sound like Marshall's. But the main contact for a consumer is their credit card or debit card statement, and that's their relationship with their banks.
Chris, what do you think? How bad is the TJX perception situation?
Well, I think there's a lot of things going on here. One thing I'd point out is I'd echo Aviva's statement that we haven't seen everything that's going to happen to them yet. There's still some lawsuits. It's unclear who's going to absorb the cost of all the reissued cards. But, you know, one of the things you benefit from is, realistically, the general public has short-term memory. So there may have been a brief period there where people were avoiding TGX stores, and then they just kind of forget about it. It's always difficult for us to look back in time and know what would have happened had this not occurred. You know, would TGX be in an even better financial situation now? Would they be about where they were now? It's always difficult to say, but I think one of the biggest things is the consumers just, they have a short attention span. It was big news, so maybe for a week or two, someone who regularly went to TJ Maxx didn't go there because they recognized TJX, TJ Maxx, oh, I'm not going to go there. They have, and then about a month or so later, they've kind of forgotten why it was they were avoiding them, and there's a nice sale, and so they head off. So I think they've benefited a lot from people's short-term memory in that respect.
You know, and I also want to add a point. I did a survey a couple of years ago. I don't know if it's still true, but I asked consumers, what do you value more, cost, convenience, or security? So when you're shopping, what's the most important factor? And costs always won out over security. So if you're going to get a good discount, you know, that's the most important thing to you.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because I've got some rather strong opinions about consumer surveys, and I find them interesting but for the most part worthless because consumers don't often say the truth. I'm not suggesting they're lying. I'm saying they don't perceive it. If you think about like a child, a young child, when asked what do they value, will mention a lot of things, fun, entertainment, and all kinds of things, but they will never mention security, even though their parents keeping them safe is extremely important. It's a given. They're assuming that, and that's not what they're referencing. The same with consumers. Consumers assume that you're going to protect my data, you're going to protect me. They're not going to mention security as a priority because it's so ingrained. They're just assuming it's there. I don't know. I think it is important to them. I just don't think they're going to mention it in a survey.
Yeah, I totally agree. You have to take surveys with a grain of salt. But it's the same thing in the reality. Consumers know that they're basically protected with their credit cards. It's just a hassle factor. So who cares if my card gets stolen if I get $100 off that dress? You know, I'm willing to take that risk. Personally, I think many consumers have that attitude because they do know they're protected. They're not as dumb as we think they are. And so they know they're always going to get their money back if they charge it to a credit card.
The unintended consequence of the zero liability plans, the unintended consequence being it actually undermines retail security, which was never what the credit cards intended.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Aviva, that a lot of people feel like it's not their problem. They're not going to have to pay for that. So, you know, even if I go shop at, you know, Shifty's fly-by-night store, It's not my problem because if my credit card gets stolen and thousands of dollars of charges show up, I just call up, you know, the credit card company and say, hey, I didn't do this, you know, take it off my account, and they're done. And they don't perceive that they pay any cost for that. And when you don't perceive that you're paying a cost for something like security in this example, then you don't value it at all.
Right.
Hey, don't crack wise on Shifties. They give great watches. Any last thoughts before we wrap this up on any of the security topics today?
You know, my closing thought is I just go back to the fact that I'd like to see the banking industry do more to strengthen card security. These systems were put in place back in the 80s when cyber criminals didn't exist. We don't need to go as far as Europe and the rest of the world with chip and PIN because, you know, we have more sophisticated networks and technology, and I think we can kind of leapfrog what's been done with chip and PIN and not spend as much on the infrastructure. But I do think that it's time to go back and rethink the card itself and the payment schemes and not expect 6 million merchants in the United States to become highly secure entities. I just think it's impractical.
Chris, any last thoughts?
I'm going to echo some of what Aviva said. I think right now you're seeing a lot of push to just make it the retailer's problem. They've got to do this, they've got to do that. I do think going forward, when we really look at true cardholder security for their information, it needs to be an overarching plan that takes into account everything from the card issuers, the banks, as well as the retailers themselves. So you really have everybody sharing the burden and making sure that you're not turning to retailers and saying, you have to invest a ton of money to upgrade a bunch of stuff because no one else is going to budge.